win that game, let's say 31-7 or 31-10, like we thought it was going to go, you know, then it's, wow, Nebraska's really on track. Look at the great fan base. They had 30,000 people in that stadium. They took over a Power 5 stadium. It's all humming in Lincoln. And instead, everyone's talking about the meltdown in the fourth quarter. I didn't see anybody nationally mention the stadium takeover, even though it was remarkable when you think about that stadium. And I know a lot of Colorado people, they did not want to believe it was going to happen. And, you know, with the crowd coming in there, and we did a deal on our website with a guy. He was a younger 23-year-old kid, so I'll give him a break. But he didn't know and understand Nebraska. And he goes, I think it's going to be under 12,000. And I go, you're crazy. I might use another word in there with that. And I sent him an email and I sent him pictures. I go, this was at Washington, 20,000. This was at Oregon, 15,000. This is at Northwestern every year, 25,000 plus. You know, every time we've gone to games like this where people have really planned and wanted to be at it, it's going to be over 20,000. And this one's closer, so it's going to be more than that. I think it would be at least 25, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's 30. And I think it was fairly close to say 30,000 was accurate with that stadium. And I know Colorado's longtime media relations director, Dave Pilotti, he had covered 400 straight Colorado football games in his career. So he'd been around a long time. And Dave comes to me after the game. He goes, it was about 20, but I couldn't see the other side. And we were on the side where all the red was at. And he could see the side that was a little bit more salted and peppered with red and black. And I go, I don't know about that, Dave. And I showed him the picture of the other side. I go, look at the side that you couldn't see. And he goes, oh. So there was a lot of disappointment in, you know, with Colorado, with how their fans gave up tickets and Nebraska got them. And I think that affected how Colorado played early in the game. Here they are in their home stadium, what's supposed to be an advantage for them. And there's more fans from Nebraska in their stadium. And I think out of the gates, it affected Colorado, especially when Nebraska, made some early plays and really had the crowd noise behind them in that stadium. So the Husker fans, I thought, played a factor early in kind of, you know, setting the tone for the first half, but then Nebraska just couldn't finish it in the second half. And you know, it started with how they came out of the gates, four straight punts by the offense with no points. And the defense continued to get stops in the third quarter, but it just kind of mounted and mounted and mounted. And, you know, defense was on the field 32 plays for 86 yards in the first half. I mean, it was a remarkable half of football. Second half, Nebraska's defense was on the field for 46 plays for 380 yards. And, you know, I think 25 of those plays were run in the fourth quarter. And, you know, typically 20 is a high number of plays. 25 is astronomical. I mean, if you're on the field 25 plays in a quarter, it's really hard to win games, especially in a fourth quarter, because you're going to get tired at that point. And I think it mounted at that point. The lack of offense Nebraska was getting and punting it over, you know, the defense ran out of gas. They ran out of energy, and it was hot. It was a hot day in Colorado. The sun was strong, and the altitude. I know they tried to downplay it all week, but it played a factor. I mean, I just remember we walked around the stadium to our car. Anybody that watched our Channel 7 Facebook Live, Andy Kindy was doused in a sweat and huffing and puffing just because the walk around the stadium was that exhausting. So it is a factor when you go out there and play. And I think Colorado being conditioned to that better than we were made a difference with how they played. But, yeah, I give their coach a lot of credit. He made the adjustments. The biggest adjustment they made defensively, they came out in a 3-4 front in the first half. And that's what Nebraska had a lot of their success on, because there was one less defensive back on the field. They were finding that mismatch, and we were getting yards on that play. I mean, the play where J.D. Spielman caught the 65-yard touchdown, there was a linebacker guarding him. Well, they adjusted in the second half to a 3-3-5. So three defensive linemen, three linebackers, and five defensive backs. And they were confident that their three defensive line with only three linebackers, so a six-man box. And typically, you play a seven- or eight-man box. So they were only really playing six up, and they were still stopping the run because Nebraska kept trying to bounce everything outside. They had enough speed on the defense to stop those plays, and they kind of abandoned the inside run for whatever reason in that game. So Colorado made a defensive adjustment. Nebraska failed to kind of match that adjustment on offense. And, you know, kind of led to the offense struggling. And, you know, they got a couple of nice plays. I mean, I think you all saw what Maurice Washington can bring to the table. I mean, he's a special, special player as far as his natural athletic ability and his speed. Martinez had some nice moments in that game. Still, the two fumbles and the interception were tough. But, you know, I thought he ran the ball well when they wanted him to run the ball. But they're still not getting enough guys involved in this offense. And that's the problem right now. You look at receiver, they've only played four receivers over 50 snaps or more. You know, and you look at the top two, J.D. Spielman and Wandell Robinson, you know, they've had a lot of catches or at least have been a factor. But Kenneth Ainoa and Mike Williams, the next two receivers, have no catches right now. The tight ends were really a non-factor this week. So that has to change, I think, for this offense. They have to have more guys involved. When you only have Spielman and Wandell and Maurice Washington going, it's a little bit easier for defenses to scheme and attack Nebraska. I know this week they're going to try, I think, especially Kenneth Ainoa. He's a starter. He's been on the field a lot, and it just hasn't happened for him yet, and they expect it to happen here soon. So that's a guy I would expect them to try to work in longer. But you look at the big picture of the offense. They had the home run plays from Washington. They had two of them. He had a 40-yard run and a 75-yard touchdown pass. And then Spielman's 65-yard touchdown at the beginning of the game. But you take away those plays, and Nebraska's offense averaged about 3 yards per play. So that's a lot of third and fours, third and fives. And when Scott Frost is not ahead of you as far as, like, your early down production, he's just like any old play caller. For Scott Frost to truly be, like, at his best, you've got to get 5, 6, 7 yards on an early down play. Then the defense is on his heels. But when you're 2nd and 9, 2nd and 8, 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7, you can't really run the tempo and attack. So then you have to kind of slow down the pace. That allows the defense to look at you more and make changes. So I think getting the tempo and rhythm going on offense has to happen, because it's taken away Scott Frost's biggest strength as a play caller, and that's making quick calls and getting defenses on their heels. And we got a taste of it at times Saturday, especially in the first half, but it was not there in the second half. So I think there's some real soul searching on kind of what they need to fix, what they need to do. The offensive line continues to be an issue, I think, for consistency. And I think what's surprising is the right side was the problem Saturday. Bo Wilson and Matt Farniak, two multi-year starters on that line, they were the ones struggling. I mean, they did a poor job of moving people and assignment reads. Trent Hixon and Cam Jurgens, who struggled week one, played a lot better in week two. And Hymus has been their most consistent guy. But Wilson and Farniak, to me, have been you know, not very good considering they're in their multi-year starting. And I know people are asking, what can they make a change? Can they try other guys? And here's the problem. There's the top. There's five guys at the top. And there's really not a very good middle. I mean, it's the top and then freshman. So it's a matter of, can you afford to put a true freshman out there at this point? And I don't think, you know, the couple freshmen they really like are quite ready for it. By next year, though, it might be different. I mean, Bryce Benhart and Ethan Piper could be starters on the offensive line by next year at this very time. But today, right now, I think mentally and developmentally, both those things are going to, you know, are slowing those guys down to give them a fresh look. And, you know, Farniak is a captain. They're not going to outright bench him. I think what they would do is move him to guard. I mean, really, Farniak's true position is probably guard, but he plays tackle because they don't have any other tackles. Benhart should be that guy down the road, and it will be interesting to see. And Ethan Piper, you know, is going to have a real chance to push for a starting job next year, I think, too. But right now, you take away those guys, there's some guys like John Raridan and Brock Bando and Matt Sichterman. They're just not at that level. I mean, I see the younger guys probably passing those guys down the road here. So, you know, that's the hard thing about offensive lines. There are no quick fixes. It takes time, and you have to do it the right way. You know, you can bring in a bunch of JUCO guys, but it doesn't always work, and it could throw your recruiting off for years if you did something like that. So they're trying to build this offensive line the right way from the bottom up, and that bottom still needs maybe one more good year. These true freshmen, there's six true freshmen right now on scholarship. And they'll get there, but it's going to be really important that they do for this offense to take the next step forward. Dedrick Mills, too, is another guy that they want to get going more. He has struggled. Some of it is blocking. Some of it, though, is him being impatient, maybe not waiting for plays to develop. And they're hoping as he gains more reps, that's going to change. And Scott Frost today at practice said he's still very confident that Dedrick Mills is going to break out here. Remember, Divine Ozigbo took till game four last year before he did anything. So, you know, it's still pretty early to say Dedrick Mills is going to do nothing this year. There's a lot of football left ahead of him. So when you look at that, but on the defensive side of the ball, they continue to rotate that defensive line. That's probably been top to bottom the best group by far, in my opinion. Nebraska is only giving up 86 rushing yards per game. They have not allowed a run longer than 20 yards all year. Their longest run they've given up is 18. So those are some pretty good stats. And they've rotated six guys fairly equally. I mean, it's almost 50-50. So they've done a good job of keeping those snap numbers between 30 to 40 per player, not getting defensive linemen in that 50-60 snap range. And I think that's important for their long-term plan of what they want to do. Linebacker Colin Miller and Will Honus played well. In fact, they were graded out better than Muhammad Berry. Muhammad Berry missed some key tackles in that game. But they've been playing those guys about 60 snaps each. You know, they got Luke Reimer back, and he made a nice play on special teams, recovered the fumble there late in the game. So he's somebody, I don't know if he'll get on the field, but he'll be a he played 20 or 22 special teams plays on Saturday out in Colorado, which was big for him to be out there. On the outside, Alex Davis has played really well. He's had a good season. They're high on him. He's been one of their, you know, early MVPs as far as the pass rush. You know, Caleb Tanner, too. I thought the play he made Saturday where he beat the left tackle off the edge to make the sack, there hasn't been an edge rusher at Nebraska do that since Randy Gregory. I thought that was a really promising sign that they had a guy that could put his hand in the dirt and fire off and beat a power five left tackle with a quarterback. So I thought that was nice to see him break out and do some things. In the secondary, Nebraska's receivers had a tough assignment. DiCaprio Boodle and Lamar Jackson, they did a pretty good job from all accounts. They broke up some passes. Laviska Shenault, the number one receiver on the NFL draft board, only had 31 yards receiving on Saturday. The problem is the plays that hurt Nebraska were shorter pass plays where tackling was involved. And as Nebraska got tired, guys were flying around missing tackles. They had 13 missed tackles in that game. We have 24 missed tackles over the first two games of the year. And Cam Taylor, for as well as he played at times, he missed, I think, four or five tackles Saturday. So him and Muhammad Berry had over half of the missed tackles. I mean, they're kind of home run hitters. They'll either hit a home run or they're striking out. And they need both those guys to play with a little bit more discipline on the field. Cam Taylor, you can see what he can do, though. He made that strip on the fumble to look like win the game for Nebraska at that time, because Nebraska had the ball at that point up seven trying to ice the game, and they were not able to do that. So they need consistency there. Now, the kicker situation, that's get the crown royal out here for that, because it's so here's what's going on at kicker right now. Barrett Pickering, they thought he'd be back last week, and then he re-aggravated like his hip flexor injury that he's been battling. So he's not even on the depth chart this week. He didn't travel to Colorado. It's kind of like a hamstring injury. It's really nagging. They're taking it slow with him. Well, then Dylan Jorgensen, his backup, he gets hurt at Colorado, and he did a couple kickups. He's out. He's not suiting up right now. He didn't go to practice this week. So your top two kickers from fall camp not practicing right now. And so what they've done is Isaac Armstrong, who apparently also has been battling a minor bump and bruise, he's been doing the punting for the last 2 years, but he was handling the field goals on Saturday. They have Lane McCollum from Norfolk. They moved him back from safety to kicker. Lane was a Air Force kicker recruit out of Norfolk, and they had him trying out for that. But then on Thursday last week, they contacted the UNL club soccer team, and three different club soccer players came over and did a tryout, and they kept one of them Trevor Yanovich. He's a former All-State soccer player from my alma mater, Omaha Gross. His dad is the soccer coach there as well. But yeah, they had him come back, and he's with the team right now, but I don't think he's actually listed on the roster. He's just practicing with them. So he's kind of their option. And Scott today said that, you know, if he could do kickoffs and get the ball through the end zone, that might be something they're looking for. But the field goal thing worries me, because I think inside the 20, Isaac Armstrong, they're relatively confident on that with him. But when you step from that 20 to 35 range, which happens a lot in a football game, that's where you know the issues come up. And you know, there's going to be a lot of close games for Nebraska in these final 10 where 3 points are going to matter. So they've got to get the kicker thing situated here, especially with the meat of the schedule approaching, because against Wisconsin or Ohio State, you're going to need opportunities to score 3 points. And they're going to need a kicker and some consistency there. So whether Pickering's back, Yanovich, this new guy, comes in, or Isaac Armstrong, I mean, somebody has to step up there and do a better job. Northern Illinois comes into Lincoln this week. Brand new coaching staff. Rod Carey, the guy that beat Nebraska 2 years ago, he's now the head coach at Temple. And he took the entire staff with him to Temple. They won the MAC last year. They won the entire conference. Very, very good team a year ago. They lost some players, though, to the NFL. Their new coach is Thomas Hammack. He's a former Northern Illinois running back, so he played there, understands the history and tradition of their program. Their new offensive coordinator, Eric Edness, is from South Dakota State. So there is some familiarity with this coaching staff, because a number of these guys on Nebraska's staff were at Northern Iowa. So they coached against Eric Edness' offense for years at South Dakota State. So they're familiar with what he does. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to do all that at Northern Illinois. But they feel like – I think the defense will have a pretty good handle on this week going into it. They have one really good running back. He was a 1,000-yard running back last year, but only has 130 yards rushing through the first 2 weeks of the season, so 65 yards a game. Their offensive line is supposed to be the best in the MAC. They have not lived up to that quite yet. So there's some things that Northern Illinois' offense is trying to work out as far as getting points and yards. They played Utah pretty tough, but they struggled to run the ball on Utah. I don't think they'll run the ball on Nebraska very effectively either, just based on what we've seen from Nebraska the last 2 weeks of stopping the run. So it's going to come down to tackling, and I think that's how people are going to challenge Nebraska. They're like, all right, we're going to make these guys tackle on these quick-hitting plays where you're flying in 100 miles an hour, and we're going to make you use fundamentals and break down and make the tackle. And we've had too many times where Nebraska's guys are flying in like a missile, and they just miss. And they're going to – I think they'll test some of that again. I would if I was a coach. That's how you attack this Nebraska defense. Offensively, what worries me about this matchup is – they're going to load the line of scrimmage with 7, 8, 9 guys. They're going to do a lot of moving with the offensive or the defensive line and shifting, and they're going to try to confuse the communication of the offensive line. So they're going to kind of move the gaps around. So it might be a deal where you think you might have the defensive lineman, all of a sudden you got to block the linebacker. And they're going to have to be able to communicate and identify the shifting and the moving that Northern Illinois does here on Saturday. And I know that has given Nebraska problems this year as far as teams – doing some of that before the snap, and they're a pretty good defense. They've held Utah to a formidable number. Utah's picked to win the Pac-12 right now. So this will be a challenge for Nebraska's offense. I think the key, once again, is rhythm and pace. If they can get tempo and rhythm going, all that pre-snap shifting won't be as effective, because you know, Scott's going to go so quick that they're not going to be able to think about all the different movement they want to do before the snap. So it will be important, in my opinion, to get some rhythm and tempo going. And I think they're pretty angry right now, and I would be too. I mean, you could actually sense just around the program and around Scott, you know, the guys are fired up this week. I mean, last week was a bitter pill to swallow for everybody. I mean, leaving Colorado, it felt like, you know, we were leaving a funeral. I mean, everybody at our hotel on Saturday morning, everybody was wearing their gear, breakfast. I saw all those same people Sunday morning, nobody was wearing their gear. I mean, and you know, our flight coming back home, nobody's wearing their Husker gear. And I bet you if we won that game, everybody would be wearing their gear going home. So I think people took it hard, that loss. The state took it hard. Scott said it was one of the hardest ones he's ever dealt with in his career. I've never seen Adrian Martinez so upset after a game before, where usually he's pretty scripted and professional. He kind of lost it a little bit. He was very emotional. He cussed up front on stage with the cameras in front of him. He was fired up. So I'll be curious how that transfers over, because you think about this game 2 years ago, pretty similar situation. We're coming off a loss at Oregon where 15,000 fans went to, and now we're coming off a loss at Colorado, another Pac-12 school where a lot of fans traveled. Northern Illinois is coming in here, similar point spread, everything's the same. How will this team look different than 2017? I mean, that will be really a telling point, how Nebraska attacks this game. Because I think in 2017, Nebraska didn't really respect Northern Illinois. I think they came in just thinking that they were going to fall over and we'd win the game. And we drove right down the field on the opening drive, and then Tanner Lee throws a pick six, and that game turned right at that moment. So this will be a big week in the early, early tenure of Scott Frost to kind of get things back on track, because then next week you go to Illinois, and that's a night game, and that's tough. And then Ohio State very well could be a night game. So you might have three night games in a row here on the schedule. We'll know the Ohio State game by next week. I think it's going to be an ABC ESPN game. Plan to put my money on it. I haven't heard anything officially, but I know Fox doesn't expect to have the game, so we'll see kind of what direction that will go, but we'll know Monday morning more than likely on Ohio State kickoff. So four official visitors coming in this weekend. Should be, there might be more. Typically, new names kind of emerge today. So as of now, about two weeks from now for Ohio State, they have at least 10 coming in. So a lot of recruits coming in town over the next 2 weeks.